Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres won 7 in a row. They are 13-5 in September. They are 4 games out of the final wild card spot. I'm still saying too little too late, but this is at least, like, this is something. This is exciting. I think in the end, we're going to say, yeah, of course, this is what they did. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of us around the team who cover the team, even within the organization, we're like, this is what's going to happen. They're going to go on this incredible win streak at the end of the season and fall just short. So anyway, Ryan, where would you like to start?
Yeah, I want to start there. Kevin, so you're saying there's a chance.
Better than one in a million.
Better than one in a million. As I look at it right now, the Padres heading into a 3-game series with the Cardinals. It starts tonight, Friday night. They are 4 games back of the final wild card spot with 9 games to play. Standing in their way is San Francisco, which is a game ahead of them, and Cincinnati, which is 3.5 games ahead of them. Cincinnati is a half game back of both the Cubs and Miami, who have the final 2 wild card spots.
All right, break that down.
Yes.
Let's break that down. San Francisco, throw them out, because if the Padres are going to have a chance, they will have gone in and beat the
swept San Francisco
Giants. Yeah. You're going to say sweep. I'll get to what I think the Padres need to do, and it's basically go 9-0. But throw the Giants out. The Reds, they hold the tiebreaker against the Reds. The Reds need to go 6-2 to hold off a 9-0 Padres team. And that's just kind of the thought we'll go with, right? Like, if the Padres go 8-1, then understand Cincinnati needs to go 5-3, right? But basically, to get to 84 wins, the Padres need to go 9-0. Okay. The Marlins need to go 6-3 to hold off a 9-0 Padres team. And the Cubs need to go 5-4 to hold off a 9-0 Padres team. This right here, what has happened the last 6 games in particular, but it's a 7-game win streak. It started with the final game in LA, is why I wrote that the Padres had not given up at the start of that road trip. The one that was Houston, Los Angeles, Oakland. That they figured they were basically out of it, but they weren't making personnel moves. They still had Rich Hill in the rotation. They, you know, there was just some injury stuff they were going to put off making final decisions on until after that trip, and really after the Astros and Dodgers. Because what came up after Astros, Dodgers, the 2 division leaders, was a bunch of terrible teams. The Padres have in order played the worst team in the American League, in the A's, the worst team in the National League, in the Rockies. They are now playing the 2nd worst team, this is in terms of record, in the National League, in the Cardinals. They go and play the Giants, who have been reeling for a while, and then they finish with the White Sox, who are bad. This was what was ahead of them. Maybe win one more in Houston, then you're, you know, it's a 7-2 trip instead of a 6-3 trip. Maybe you're 3 games back right now, and then it's far more realistic, 3-9 versus 4-9. But I think it's hilarious. The Padres were 6 games back with 12 to play, 5.5 back with 11 to play, 5 back with 10 to play, 4.5 back with 9 to play. And then yesterday, while they were off, the Cubs lost, the Marlins lost, and the Reds lost. So they gained a half a game yesterday while they slept. So it's exciting if you want to make it exciting. And I say go ahead, because there hasn't been a whole lot of exciting this year.
Here is the problem. The Padres played the Cardinals, a terrible, terrible team. Unfortunately, the Cubs played the Rockies, the worst team in the National League. And the Reds play Pittsburgh.
Right.
So it's not just the Padres that have sort of easy skating here. It's the teams that they're chasing would need to essentially, blow it down the stretch.
You make a great point. Didn't the Pirates just take 2 or 3 from the Cubs?
Yes.
And 5-4. For the Cubs to go 5-4, they have to be better than they've been recently. Like,
good point.
Look, I'm starting it out by saying, so we're just having like a what if kind of conversation here. So when you say one thing, I'll play devil's advocate. The Cubs have not been good. They were really good for a time. And that was a period that got them into the spot they're in, and they may well make the playoffs. But 5-4 would be an improvement. The big thing to me here is the Padres going 9-0 and finishing 16-0. Is it something we thought at the beginning of the season they could do? Sure. We should get into how they've gotten to 7-0. I think it's somewhat fascinating. Manny Machado on the sideline and so forth. But so who do the Reds play? The Reds play, you said, the Pirates?
Yes.
Who do the Marlins play?
The Marlins play Milwaukee.
Okay. All right. Milwaukee in first place, basically, I think, what, like a magic number of one, I think.
Right. But still trying. I mean, you would presume still trotting out a major league roster every year.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's to me, man, Kevin, and when I think about it, okay, if the Padres had three more wins right now, they'd be right. We would be bracing for a fun, dramatic week of baseball, regardless of how they did.
Yes.
Which requires them just being horrible instead of historically awful in extra inning games. Which, I mean, three wins in extra inning games. What, you're 3-8 instead of 0-11. It would require them being just bad and not awful in one run games.
10-18 instead of 7-20, or 10-19 instead of 7-22.
If they had one walk-off win between the night the Aztecs played for the national championship game in basketball and Tuesday, if they had three walk-off wins in between them, we would be talking about how this is a massive week. And Kevin, this goes to something you've been saying since May and June, which is, hey guys, next time, start better. Sitting around talking about how there's plenty of time, They were saying that up until the All-Star break. There's no time, Kevin.
There's this split, and it's, I mean, I'm going to end up going on a tangent. I want to, but because I think it's one of our things in this world that we don't get along. If you have a take and someone else has a take, there can't be any middle ground. So here's the deal. There's some in the organization that have pushed for more urgency early on, and others that have said, no, it's a long season. Hey guys, there's a middle ground. You don't have to play it like the NFL, but you do have to not lose this thing in May. Mm-hmm. You do have to, as you just said, perfectly, three more. So we're not even talking being in control. We're not asking for that. We're asking for a more realistic shot in the final week. We're not like asking for you to be as good as you should have been. We're just asking you to maybe, of the 23 games that I've had this big chart I've run a couple times in the newsletter, the 23 heartbreaking losses, be they some of the extra innings wins, some of the come from ahead losses late where the bullpen blew it, the one run losses, of 23 of those, win three.
And then you would be talking, okay, you know, maybe if they go 7-2, they're in. Or maybe if they go 6-3, they're in. Maybe they have leapfrogged the Giants heading into this weekend. Maybe they have leapfrogged, oh, look at this.
Oh,
remaining schedules. And they've made us both prettier, Kevin.
Yeah, see, you don't know when you're over on the left. But here's the deal. You, that's funny. That shows who we are. You went to hide behind the graphic, and I moved to make sure that everyone could still see me. If you're really missing out, if you're listening later and you don't see graphics here that show all of the contenders and the remaining schedule. Now, I'm going ahead and penciling in the Phillies, and I'm going ahead and penciling in the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks need just three more victories to basically, that's sort of their magic number for elimination of the Padres.
Right.
So, and gosh, it's not much higher for like them to, you know, off the Reds. The Reds would have to go, I think, probably like 7-1 to catch the Diamondbacks, unless the Diamondbacks were going to go 1-7 or 1-8, whatever they have left. Look, it's still too much to fathom. Let's, you know, like call me, which I know you will, if the Padres sweep the Cardinals and the other teams win one game.
I mean, look at this. I mean, look at this. If I'm the Cubs, I am scared to death heading into the final nine games.
Yes.
They're not playing well, for starters. They play the Rockies. Okay, Rockies stink. I mean, Padres proved that, showed that. Then Atlanta.
Yep.
Then Milwaukee. You hope like hell, if you're the Cubs, that Atlanta and Milwaukee is giving their guys a little bit of a break before the playoffs when you play them, right? The Marlins, Brewers, Mets, Pirates.
Here's That's the funny tough. Thing about this. here's the deal. The Padres are playing Eggy Rosario, Matt Batten, Jose Azokar, you know, and Manny Machado's not playing third base. Manny Machado's not playing every three games. So, like, that's where I have it. This is a, I mean, this is a great discussion. This is fun. This is, I mean, I'm excited. You can tell, like, hey, we got something to talk about that might actually matter. And I think this is what you do down at the end and what you look forward to. But the Padres have so much shown that you just don't know. Like, how many times, I'm not even afraid to use the word should have. Right. Like, how many times should the Padres have won, or should they have gone on a streak, or, you know, were they better than the teams they were playing at a certain time, and then they didn't come through? But to your point, I mean, those are not – I mean, the Marlins, you know, you could say theirs a little easy. The Reds isn't terribly difficult, but it's like, you know, like, so what? Like, this is the first time all year the Padres have done what they were supposed to do.
Right. Well, let's talk about, Kevin, you bring up a great point, and I think that this is sort of the next part of our podcast here. Hey, they are doing this with a heavy dose of Matt Batten and Eggy Rosario and Jose Azokar and Matt Waldron Pedro Avila. Guys are getting chances here. Yet the results have been better, overwhelmingly better.
Right, because the teams they're playing also have those players in the lineup.
Well, and that's my question, which is, are they playing better, or is the competition just bad?
They're playing better, for sure. You cannot eliminate the competition, right? Also, Xander Bogaerts has the highest batting average, the highest on-base percentage, and the highest slugging percentage. He has 9 doubles and 4 homers, and he's batting .471 in September. Juan Soto has been this is one of his better months. He's had power, fewer walks, more hits. Tatis has had a couple big games, but you also are getting it from around the lineup. Matt Batten, some key hits, and otherwise.
Campuzano's been great.
Moving players over. I knew there was that one. Yes, Luis Campuzano has been fantastic, has come through in clutch situations. There is something to this belief, and that can be the difference. Maybe there is not momentum in baseball. We need to come up with a different word, but there is something about confidence, about chemistry. Look, the Padres should have won if they all hated each other this year. They have 4 really good players. By the way, I was very clear in the story I wrote a week ago, they don't dislike each other. So I shouldn't even have said that. But I don't want people to think, no, this team is talented enough to be the Phillies right now, regardless of anything. But they weren't. They didn't perform like that. They needed a little something. And if you're not watching, you're listening later, like doing a little, like, you know, suave move or something. I don't know what I'm doing, but like trying to look cool. They needed a little something that they didn't have this year. Like, you know what I'm saying, Ryan?
Yeah. It also helps to have the National League Cy Young Award winner in your rotation.
Yes.
And how quickly we forget, when you and I were talking before the show, you know, I threw some topics out and you're like, oh, we should probably talk about Blake Snell. It's like, oh yeah, the guy who threw 7 no-hit innings. I think he cemented the National League Cy Young Award with that performance the other night. Kevin, what do you think? And again, how will this season be remembered?
Let's just put it this way. So he has a 2.33 ERA. Next is Kodai Senga at 2.96. Next is Justin Steele, who in his past 2 starts has given up 6 runs in each in a total of 9 innings. So let's just put it this way. If Blake Snell allows 8 runs in 7 total innings in his next 2 starts, his ERA would be 2.64. Mm-hmm. Kodai Senga could throw 2 complete game shutouts. Mm-hmm. And his ERA would be 2.66.
Wow.
So Blake Snell is virtually assured of finishing the season as the National League Cy Young winner. ERA leader. Right. Now, is that all there is to being the Cy Young winner? No. But throw in some of these other numbers. His innings are not an issue anymore. 31 starts. He's going to finish with 33. He's finished stronger than anyone. As a matter of fact, his last 22 starts have been borderline historic. And in some ways, baseball is beautiful because you can add in, like, you know, over his past 22 starts, no one has ever had a 1-2-3 ERA with 64 hits allowed and 128 strikeouts or whatever it is. It's like, like, wow, that's a lot of caveats, but okay, still historic. No one's ever done it. I don't see any way that really Blake Snell isn't the Cy Young winner. I guess if he were to blow up, and there are some other guys, Logan Webb is probably going to have like 220 innings or something like that. I know Spencer Strider is real sexy to people because of the strikeouts. Corbin Burns, Zach Gallen on a winning team, a lot of innings and a really good pitcher. But just take the totality of the numbers and the big number, which is ERA. And I don't see how you're not correct that he has basically cemented it at this point.
And it's weird to say this about a Padre, Kevin, but he has the most name recognition of any of the guys you just mentioned, maybe outside of Spencer Strider. You know, he's somebody who's won a Cy Young before in the American League, somebody who is, I mean, I think a celebrity within the sport of baseball, interesting cat. Kevin, he's making himself a ton of money with every start here, isn't he?
Yeah, by the way, we're talking now. Understand what I'm saying. Blake Snell has a lot of work to do. And fortunately for him, he has a lot of time to do it. But we are talking about Hall of Fame stuff when you are a Cy Young winner in both leagues. That's just how it works out. Like, people don't win two Cy Youngs, and people don't win a Cy Young in the National League and American League. Now, that used to be rarer too, because people didn't switch teams as often and you didn't switch leagues as often. But still, like, it's no longer silly to at least have Blake Snell on your radar of, well, does he follow it up with another 5 years that are somewhat like this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we forget the kid's 30, man. Like, that's young for a pitcher. Yeah. So, like, this is super impressive what Blake Snell's doing. And he's just a really, really good pitcher. And the fact is, he's just becoming a really, really good pitcher. I think there were some down years in the American League in 2018. Now, he had a great season. He did. But, like, you know, Blake Snell's always been interested in improvement. That's one of the things I really like about him is what he talks about. He does. He goes out and he's not talking like, hey, I'm going to throw a six shutout. He's talking about how he's going to attack hitters and you know, what some of the results with inside of the results are going to be. And they are so often. He's a really smart guy. And I've talked to him about this, you know, the whole, like, the way he talks sometimes and that he's goofy and that he plays video games. People don't understand, like, this is a smart, grounded guy. Like, this is really impressive. And yes, to your last point, it's going to make a lot of money.
Somebody is going to pay Blake Snell a lot of money. Kevin, can we talk about Bogaerts for a minute? It's so funny. Remember what, June or July, when I think it was Manny Machado who was saying, hey, you know, talking about the big four. Hey, we just got to be what the back of our baseball cards say that we are, right? If they just did that, they'd be fine, was sort of his contention then. Three of the big four are essentially what the back of their baseball cards say they should have been this year. Machado being the only one who's probably significantly down. Would you say that?
Yeah. If you want to give a bunch of caveats to Tatis's season being 20 games shorter and really immeasurably different because of the year off, right? And the surgeries, he's not close to his numbers, but then I'm with you in terms of, like, the baseball card, no. But, like, you know, I think this season was plenty good enough for Tatis, all things considered. The other two, Soto and Bogaerts, somehow Bogaerts, especially if he continues like this over nine games, somehow this guy's going to end up basically where he's always been.
About what you thought he was going to do before the season, right? Yeah. And again, I think that a lot of it is just a coincidence that as he's playing better, the Padres are playing better. I think to say that this was all – they were bad because of Xander Bogaerts, and now they're good because of Xander Bogaerts, I think that that's oversimplification.
Yes.
But when he is hitting, and when at least three of those four guys are hitting, and that hasn't been the case necessarily all of them together at one point this year, that lineup becomes a heck of a lot longer, heck of a lot deeper. I mean, he won them – a game the other night with just a wall scraper home run. But, you know, where's that been, right?
This guy puts the ball in play too. Yes, this year, especially with some pitches he wasn't able to get to, and then some bad habits he still wasn't able to get to even when he felt better. But, you know, he leads the league in infield singles.
Huh.
That happens when you awkwardly put dribblers into play, or, you know, hit a hard ball in the hole at shortstop and beat it out. He's not a burner, but I think he is going to set a career high with, like, you know, whatever he has now, 13 steals or whatever. But he's not a burner. He's not like laying down bunts and beating him out, but he puts the ball in play. He knows the game of how he's supposed to, you know, hit in that particular moment. And good things happen when you put the ball in play. That's overplayed sometimes in today's game. Pitchers are incredible, but Xander Bogaerts is a heck of a player. That doesn't mean, like, we jury out for a long time on whether it was justified, that contract. But Xander Bogaerts is a heck of a player.
Yeah.
Fairly. I was going to say unfortunately, but fairly. Guys are judged based on the money they make and the contract they got. You know, that's something, hey, you know, and they sometimes bristle at that, and I understand that, but, like, deal with it. Because, like, I had a conversation. It was a private conversation with a fairly high profile Padre this week about the money. And it was like, no, as I've told you before, doesn't make a difference to me, except when you're making enough, then it kind of does become about the money, because there are major expectations, and there's a reason you got that money, and it was because of those expectations.
It's a sign of the organization's level of respect and esteem for you, frankly.
And I mean, let's talk about, yes.
I mean, let's talk about Drew Pomeranz, right? I mean, it, not just for guys who make $30 million a year. A guy like Drew Pomeranz was given a lot of money for who he was, right? And we mentioned, and it should be mentioned most times when we bring up his name, how much money he's making this year. And it's just, to not pitch, because he's hurt. But I mean, it's a sign of what the organization thinks of you when they pay you more money than anybody else was offering you.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a judgment on the player, but sometimes that can be a judgment on the organization too, right?
Yep. I mean, I've been doing this long enough to know that there are guys who maybe injuries, they're just not tough. But most often, like, injuries are not a guy's fault. And guys work hard, and there's bad luck. And so I have a real problem. I have pushed back on the Drew Pomeranz, like, what a stiff. I'm like, I'll push back on that, like, vehemently. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he didn't choose for it to go this way.
Right.
That said, there is no doubt that this is a major letdown, and that, you know, he really cost the Padres a lot.
Well, the decision is the decision to sign a guy who had a little bit of an injury history and who was pitching in a new role. And hey, his numbers were great as a setup guy. I mean, he was stellar, but, you know, to me, this is not a Drew Pomeranz problem. This is an organizational problem, which is
okay. Now there's another one where I'll say, if you saw him pitch, like, this guy is like the best, like, and so that I could even posture that is like the best left-handed setup guy.
He was Andrew Miller for a while. He was Andrew Miller. Yeah.
And it's real easy to then go back and go, oh, but wait a minute, this time he missed and this time he missed. Well, he'd pitched for a while and he'd been healthy, and you were asking him to go out and just be who he had been. The problem is that, yes, you stack these up next to some other contracts, and it's a part of the heap. On its own, I will push back on the Pomeranz contract as like a bad contract. Mm-hmm. You can't separate it from the heap of some other contracts that, you know, I would say there were some others that didn't have to be given. But if you wanted to get Drew Pomeranz, that's the contract you were going to give.
Right. Well, and that's it too. And when we talk about next year, the Padres having a lower payroll, because it will be lower probably. When we talk about the Padres having a lower payroll, we forget about guys whose numbers are coming off the book.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Drew Pomeranz is one of them, man.
Drew Pomeranz, you're going to have a couple starting pitchers. You're going to have Josh Hader. You're going to have, you know, we'll see who leaves, but there's plenty of places that it can come off. The key is going to be, who do you replace them with? I mean, this is like where, yeah, the scouting that has got you your young players and everything needs to be spot on at the major league level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's you're right, Kevin. You're right. The Padres here, again, 9 games left. Don't want to take away from this series. It's funny looking at the starting pitchers, you know, I mean, it does not, these are all guys with stuff to prove, but no Yu Darvish, no Joe Musgrove. Yet the Padres are still hanging in.
They're still hanging in. Joe's still throwing. He's not going to pitch.
So he'll pitch the playoff game.
Don't rule out if they make the playoffs that he would be on the roster, but he's not pitching this season, but kind of like them, like they're not going to the playoffs, but if they do, it was never, I've written this, that Joe is never going to shut down like completely. Right. Joe doesn't shut down. He basically takes like a week off in the off season and continues to throw. And look, this is his first time missing time. I mean, of the big three, Blake Snell just passed him in terms of starts. They both had made every start. Darvish is the one that's been had some issues in the big three of the pitchers they got before the 21 season. But it turns out, everybody, Blake Snell's going to leave as the guy who was the best among the big three during those 3 years.
Kevin, without giving me too much grossness here, how is Ha-Seong Kim?
You know, he was out there. He was almost going to go in that game if Xander Bogaerts couldn't finish. He had a hamstring cramp, I guess. That wasn't serious enough for him to come out, but he almost did. And Kim had to go in. He was their last infielder. They don't have any others because they're, you know, Manny's not playing. They're starting Batten and Rosario. They could have, I guess, moved Profar, but that wasn't going to happen. Made him in a middle infielder. So Kim was ready to go in. I watched him do stuff. It looked fine to me. They said it was fine. So looks like Kim will be in there tonight.
Anytime you talk about abdominal discomfort and stomach discomfort, it's one of those I almost don't want to know. Kevin, last thing before we go, is it possible that Jerks and Profar has been the key to the whole dang thing?
How many games it is lost? Absolutely not possible, but that doesn't mean there is so much to consider when you got that. Like, that is a good clubhouse guy who maybe, you know, makes a little difference when we're talking about, as we spent time all year, but earlier here, breaking it down, when we're talking about 3 or 4 wins, heck, maybe that was it. If Jurison Profar keeps his contract, doesn't opt out, there's no Matt Carpenter and Nelson Cruz. There's maybe a different guy that they decide they're going to go out and get who knows who that would have been and what it would have been. Could it have been not this guy, but like another guy who had a season like Jorge Alfaro or right?
Right.
That was a domino that fell when Jurickson and Profar made what he believes was a mistake of opting out. So,
and is there a 3-win difference?
There you go.
Profar, by the way, backing this up, I know we got to wrap here soon. Backing this up, Jurickson Profar is a Padre now because he was awful with the Rockies.
Yep.
There's no rule that says he wouldn't have been just as terrible with the Padres, right?
Right, except this. You are – that's beautiful, and I love that because that's always the thing. It's like if someone gets caught stealing third and the next guy singles. You know, it's not guaranteed he was going to get the same pitch and make the same hit if the guy had still been on second base. So, like, it's, you know – there's a law for that I can't ever remember what the name is, but it's like there's not a guarantee that there's going to be like that. Jurickson Profar, and I knew just from spending 3 years talking to him and getting to know him a little bit and the people around him, it was a mistake for him to leave just for this. It took him a year or two to get comfortable here. He loved it here as he loved it in Texas, but he loved it here. He didn't like it in Oakland when he played there. He didn't like it in Colorado when he played there. Now you might say, oh, that's convenient. No. Like, this guy is a comfort guy. There are guys like that. Blake Snell's a comfort guy. That was a mistake for him to leave based on what the reality of the market was. It looked like the market was going to be there for a player to get a few more $1 million over a few more years. So really, you know, he was thinking he's going to make 20, 30 more million guaranteed based versus 1 year here. Because he essentially got the same thing from the Rockies that he did from the Padres. But that was a mistake. The comfort here might have been worth 10 more points on the on base percentage or whatever, Brian. So you are correct, but I'm telling you, I do think that had something to do with it. He did not like Denver. He wasn't as comfortable there.
So what you're saying is there's a chance that two comfort guys, Jurickson Profar and Blake Snell, will be Padres next year.
If they're smart. No, I think here's something that's happened. Going through all this has made Blake Snell a lot more mature. A lot. I've talked to him about some different ways that he's going to look at things. He is going to go into whoever his team is as a leader, as a guy who's ready to have a voice. And he knows that he needs to give things more of a chance and that he needs to work right away on making that new place comfortable. And, you know, think about yourself as a male. Okay. I mean, I feel like my wife was 40 when she was 20. All right. Probably you as well. And anybody the growth between 27 and 30 for many men is, I mean, it's gigantic. As is, you know, the growth between, you know, 18 and 25. I think it's a little slower. But that growth between mid late 20s and early 30s is a big time. And I think it forged a lot in Blake Snell. He's gonna be a different person first year with his new team than first year with the Padres.
Yeah, I'm not saying that exists in my house, Kevin, but there have been nights when my wife has been working on legal filings and I've been playing Madden on the PS4. So if that's not the perfect example, I don't know what it is.
It also sounds like the perfect marriage.
We should stop there, Kevin. Padre baseball, 3-game series against the St. Louis Cardinals. Worth watching. Worth watching. I don't know when the last time we could have said that was, but worth watching
Or was this the last time? So that's kind of exciting in itself. Was this, you know, on Monday, are we talking about they're still in this thing? We'll see.
Yep, absolutely. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.